Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. A standout Husker in 10 years in the NFL, announcing his retirement this week. Matt Slauson is back with us. Matt, congratulations on a tremendous career in the NFL. How tough a decision was it for you to step away? You have been a warrior, man.
Yeah, it's been extremely hard. You know, after the injury I sustained this year, breaking my neck back in October, caused you to kind of reevaluate things a little bit, and the organization gave me an incredible opportunity to coach the rest of the year, and it was sort of looking like that was the path that I was going to go on, and I had a really good conversation with the head coach and general manager over the last couple weeks, and they did make me an absolutely incredible coaching offer, but ultimately, after countless hours of going down each avenue of this, my wife and I decided that we just need some time to be together. And so I really appreciate the Colts organization for offering me that opportunity there. But, yeah, I'm just excited to be a dad and a husband for a while.
Well, Matt Slauson's with us here, Hail Varsity Radio, just with the Colts and retiring this week. That's it, man. You've gone from New York to Chicago to San Diego to Indy. And as a father and husband, that juggling act on top of your role with the Colts, and what a year Indy had, what a year Andrew had. I mean, your offensive line was physical and tough, and I think you had a lot to do with that when they brought you in. That's your reputation, man, as a guy around the league. You helped kind of bring that young group up that's talented, but I think you were instrumental in that. I want to go back, Matt, to the injury, and if you can, tell us what happened. And I know the aftermath was you played a full game with a fractured spine, and you could have been paralyzed. Correct.
Well, it wasn't quite a full game, but so the series of events, we're playing on Thursday night up in New England, and I've got a lot of history playing against New England from all my time at the Jets. Mm-hmm. And since I left the Jets, I've played them a handful of times. There's a particular linebacker there named Dante Hightower that me and him enjoy having battles against each other. So I've always got my head on a swivel for him. But what I failed to realize is the other linebacker, I can't even tell you his name, but that guy can bring some wood. And in the first half of that game, I was pulling around on a power play, and he just came down and hit me right in the chest, and he actually broke my sternum.
Jeez.
Right after halftime, we come out for our series, and they call the same play again. So I go pulling around, thinking like, okay, I'm going to get some payback on this guy. But he saw me coming the whole way, so he charged again with his head down. And you know, in that half a second time, you have a lot of things going through your head, and you say, okay, this is the guy that broke my chest in the first half, so now I got to protect my chest because that's hurting. I'm having trouble breathing now, so I got to drop my head to protect my chest. And as soon as we hit, I felt a little pop in my upper back, and I started getting some like shocks going down my arms and legs, and at that point I was a little bit scared that I had done something. But I told myself, all right, if you can make it back to the huddle, then that's a really good sign. So I walked back in the huddle, and in my head I'm going, see, you're fine. You walked back over here. Given another play, let's see how that goes. The next play went just fine. And I said, all right, quit being a wimp. You're going to finish up the game. Nothing's wrong because, look, you walked back to the huddle and you played another play. So nothing can be wrong with your neck. And over the last quarter and a half of that game, I started getting some numbness in my feet. But I just chalked that up to adrenaline from the initial fear. And all this is a very cautionary tale for any future players out there to don't be an idiot the way I was. Because when I found out after the fact what it was, things got pretty real and pretty scary. And now I count myself very lucky every day. I believe God was watching out for me and my family there. Because of my own pride, you know, I didn't want to come out.
Matt Slauson with us, Hail Varsity Radio. That's something you can't turn off, that mental toughness, that physical toughness. You've got to have. But there's also a line in the sand. And how did that conversation go with teammates and family members about, all right, man, we love you. We love you being tough, but hold on a sec. I mean, yeah. How did that yeah, discussion go 24 hours after?
I mean, really, those conversations were happening for weeks and months after. I'll tell you a story. There was a couple weeks left in the season. We're in the beginning of playoffs. I had just gotten my final scans from the doctors, and they gave me the all clear. I said, look, you are now healed. So now if you wanted to continue your career, you know, we know you may not continue your career, but if you wanted to physically, you're all set to do so. They called it baseline risk. They said baseline risk means you're at no increased risk. You're at the same risk as you've always been of injuring that spot. And so I was really excited, really happy. I come running in to the facility to go see my offensive line coach, who is a really close friend of mine. And he says, look, I don't care what the scans say, you will never play here ever again. And if for some reason the organization allows you to play, I will quit because wow. I will not sit here and watch you put yourself into a chair because you are selfish and prideful. I will not let it happen. And, you know, he's a pretty rough guy. Some of the things he says sounds really extreme and really angry and mean, but I knew the position he was coming out of was just pure love and concern. So that's kind of an example of some of the conversations I was having.
That's pretty intense. Matt Slauson is with us, standout Husker, 10-year NFL vet, and his story about his injury and retirement. Matt, I want to reflect on your career. I remember you with New York and Chicago and San Diego, and then we've highlighted Indy. What are you most proud of?
Honestly, I'm proud of it all. Every organization I've been to, really every single year, is like a different chapter in a book. And I'm sure I'm not the first guy that has referenced that. You know, coming out of Nebraska, getting drafted late, coming into a line that was riddled with first rounders and future Hall of Famers. I believed in my heart that the best I was shooting for my rookie year was hopefully making practice squad, maybe getting a year on practice squad, and then coming home and finding something else to do, because I was not good enough to make it. I didn't believe I was good enough to make it. Apparently the organization saw something different, and I made the active roster my rookie year, and that was a complete whirlwind. And getting to back up a personal hero of mine and Alan Faneca, who needs to be in the Hall of Fame now, and he's gotten snubbed 2 years in a row. And I think it's a bunch of crap. But the guy is absolutely incredible. And after my rookie year, the organization comes to me and says, look, we're going to release Alan, and we want you to replace him. And I remember looking right at Rex Ryan's face and said, are you sure about this? And he goes, yeah, I believe you can do it. And since then, I took over the starting role, and I started for the next nine years.
116 career games, 113 starts. Matt Slauson, his retirement, he's with us here, Hail Varsity Radio. Is there a friendship, a relationship that lasts? And as far as the Nebraska side, how did Nebraska get you ready for the NFL? And what are your plans post-football? Are you going to stick with coaching? What charity work do you want to do? What outreach are you thinking about? Because you've done a lot of that as well.
Right now, my immediate plans are to do a whole lot of nothing. Our kids are in school here in Indy through May, so we're just going to be here, and then we have plans the beginning of June to make our final move back home to Nebraska. We have a small farm about a half an hour south of Lincoln. You know, we're going to kind of do a little bit of farming, but really it's just going to be a lot of being together. As far as the coaching side of things, I'm sure I'm not going to be able to stay away. I'm going to go into the university. I'm going to talk with Scott, and we're going to, I'm going to find something to do there, I'm sure. And as far as relationships over the years, I mean, shoot, you're on a roster with 53 guys every year, with another eight practice squad guys. You make some incredible relationships, and man, I can't even list all the relationships because I've gotten close with so many guys. But, you know, my time at the Jets, I think I was closest with Nick Mangold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's another personal hero of mine, and he'll be up for the Hall of Fame soon. And, you know, at the Bears was probably, I mean, shoot, there's a whole slew of them. Everyone on the O-line, from Kyle Long, Roberto Garza, Jermon Bushrod, Charles Leno. I mean, I can't even list off everyone. Eben Britton, Taylor Boggs, Will Montgomery, and then of course Jay Cutler is an absolute favorite of mine.
how is that dynamic, man? Because you got this persona with Cutler, but you knew him best.
Yeah, he is just an incredible guy. Incredible guy that has a terrible reputation. It actually angers me, the reputation that he has. But I believe it's because he's got an offensive lineman personality. He looks at this game like an offensive lineman does. He doesn't do well with the spotlight. He doesn't do well with being the All-American boy cookie-cutter quarterback. He likes just being a nasty, nitty-gritty guy. He likes to do his work and then go be with his family. He doesn't like putting on the show, and I think that's why a lot of people started to look at him a little bit differently. And God, I try to sing his praise everywhere I can. And then after that, going out to San Diego, getting to reconnect with Danny Woodhead again.
Yeah.
That was absolutely incredible. In fact, I've been talking with him almost every day. And we're really excited to reconnect again in Nebraska. We're even talking about setting up some sort of podcast.
Oh, good.
Talking about just anything and everything. So, you know, whenever that gets going, I'm sure it's going to be a hell of a lot of fun. And then being here at the Colts, coming in here was a bit of a different capacity, because I was the second oldest guy on the team. The only guy I was second to was Adam Vinatieri, who's in his 23rd, just finished his 23rd year in the NFL. And, you know, he started kicking in the NFL the year before I started playing football as a child.
Wow.
I started when I was 11. His first year in the NFL, I was 10. And I was I'm the second oldest guy on the team behind him. So, you know, when the head coach and general manager brought me in here, they told me, they said, look, yes, we're bringing you in here because we believe in your abilities on the field and all that, but we're really bringing you in here to show these guys kind of the old school way of doing things. And I think that definitely played a part into me breaking my neck and continuing to do some of the stupid things I was doing, just because I wanted to show these guys it's okay to play hurt. Well, part of the issue was I wasn't just hurt. I was injured. And there's a big difference between hurt and injured. And at that time, I didn't want to see it.
Matt Slauson, spending time with us here at Hail Varsity Radio. Matt, looking forward to having you back in Nebraska. Congrats on your success. And thanks for being so honest with us about this past year, man. It was very real to hear what you went through, and I'm excited for you and your family in the next chapter you guys have.
Yeah, I am too. I really appreciate the time, Chris.
And we're back.
Fellas, think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Welcome back to Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Excuse me, a little bit of a best-of episode. Schmidt having a little bit of a illness situation going on today, but nonetheless, we power through. We power you through Friday. Like I said, Colton Stone, find me on Twitter at @2birds1stone. Joining me is the Pride of Fairbury, NBC Sports, Bill Dolman. Find him on Twitter at Bill Dolman. Bill, you're not covering cross-country skiing, I'm assuming, but the weather sure feels like we could be out doing that.
Well, it's biathlon, of course. It's the heart of the biathlon season, just a couple of more events before the World Championships in Östersund, Sweden. I know everybody's got that carved on their dashboards. It's posted on their refrigerators, and we're getting set to go with the action in Kenmore, Canada, later on tonight and the next week in Salt Lake City. So, yeah, we're not doing cross-country, but NBC Sports has you covered for all of your biathlon needs. And, as I like to say, if they're skiing and shooting at targets, it's biathlon. If they're skiing and shooting at each other, it's a Bond movie.
Well, Bill, plenty of stuff going on in the state of Nebraska as far as sports goes. We've got enough to talk about when it comes to basketball, but you said, you know, you cover biathlon. Is there anything that really sticks out as maybe the strangest sporting event you've ever had to cover? Or is there maybe the toughest thing you've had to cover that maybe you weren't used to?
Holy cow. Well, I've called probably seriously, legitimately, maybe 30 different sports in my career, maybe 15 or 20 or so with NBC alone. When they first called me 3 years ago to do some things for them, the first question was, could you do ski jumping? And I said, well, I'm from Nebraska. Of course I can do ski jumping. You know, everyone has its own unique thing to it. I have great respect for all of the athletes in the Olympic sports. Curling was quirky, and that probably got more notoriety from that than maybe anything I've ever done. I will say this. I got a call one night. I was working rugby in Denver, mm-hmm. and I got a call from NBC, and they asked me if I could do freestyle slopestyle skiing. And of course, again, relying on my Fairbury, Nebraska roots, of course I can do freestyle slopestyle skiing. I had never heard of freestyle slopestyle skiing. I had never seen freestyle slopestyle skiing. And that call came in about 7 o'clock at night. And the call time the next morning was 4 a.m. for a competition, a season opening competition in New Zealand. And, the first time that I happened to see it was after I said, "Hi, everybody, I'm Bill Dolman, along with Trace Worthington. Great to have you with us for the season opener of freestyle slopestyle skiing from New Zealand." And then they had a race, and that was the first time I ever saw it.
Yeah, I can't rely on being from Omaha to call freestyle slopestyle skiing. I wouldn't even be able to say it live on air. I'd stumble through.
Well, it wasn't easy. I'll guarantee you that. I still, to this day, have to be careful in terms of how I pronounce it all. But look, I love every assignment that NBC gives me, and biathlon has been quirky, but it has been a lot of fun. And I think it's one of those sports that if you watch it, you get into it. It becomes an acquired taste, a little bit like curling. But the respect I have for the athletes in these sports was really born out of what I did at the University of Nebraska and with Nebraska ETV. When you cover wrestling and the gymnastics, volleyball was my niche, getting into the business, track, swimming, all of those. And with that background at Nebraska and seeing all of those athletes in addition to football, basketball, and all that, I would not have had the opportunity to work two Olympics and be with NBC right now. So Nebraska, the support that they give all of those athletes that work harder than anybody else with far less notoriety, it's a special place for those kind of athletes.
Yeah, now switching to Nebraska, sticking.
I'm trying to filibuster so we don't have to talk about Nebraska basketball.
Yeah, I appreciate it because, you know, it's been interesting these past couple weeks, to say the least. But kind of where I wanted to go first is, you know, something we talked about a little bit earlier this week is almost – it's not the offense they are running, it's rather the lack thereof, and some poor shooting performances from seniors that you're expecting to have good shooting nights. What have you seen that is the issue with this offense? You could go with there's a lack of movement, there's a lack of shooters. Is there a lack of confidence? What is it?
Brother, I've said this for weeks, and I felt as though I was right back then, and I'm right now. It is Nebraska, rightfully so, had a lot of confidence coming into the season, and they have one of the best starting lineups in the Big Ten, but they just don't have any depth, and that was pretty evident early on. That was going to be an issue, and it was. But the problem with that supreme confidence that they had offensively is they just don't have the ability to do what they think they can do consistently. It is an offense that delved into an NBA mentality, and they watch. You know, the NBA is a lifestyle, and for college basketball players, you can watch the NBA 24/7, and you watch what those guys do night in and night out. And there are, unfortunately, too many college basketball teams today, and Nebraska is not alone, but they just believe that they can do the same thing. And it just is not true. There are 10 or 15 programs that don't function that way. They still play the game the college way. And if they... And they have the depth that if somebody, you know, goes off on a James Harden type, you know, tries to be James Harden, you can bench them if they're not doing it right, and you find somebody else that can play. Nebraska has no depth beyond their top five. I said that back at the end of non-conference. They're playing way too many guys 30-plus minutes a game and not very many guys over, you know, 10 minutes a game. But just watching them play, they fell into this trap that they could just jack it up, you know, early in the shot clock, and that the shots were gonna go in because that's what they see on TV every night. And you just can't play college basketball that way. Nebraska certainly can't. And when somebody's cold or undisciplined, you can't take them out and put somebody else in because there's just nobody there on the bench. It became very difficult to watch. Not because they were, just because they were trying to be something that they're not, and that's not a pro basketball team, but they were trying to be that.
Bill Dolan with us on Hill Varsity Radio, and Bill, you kind of touched on the lack of depth. We've been talking about that all week. Is so much they go into the transfer pool, they go just try to get big name guys that maybe are only going to be there a year, year and a half, 2 years, and you don't really have a lot of you have seniors, but you don't really have veterans of this team, and you don't really have guys that have been developed through this program. Have you seen that same issue? I think that's kind of what you're hitting on, but you basically don't have developed seniors, and your one senior that you'd think would be developed in Glenn Watson has almost regressed.
My first warning flag went up with the Texas Tech game. Not the fact that they lost that game, because Texas Tech is pretty good, but the fact that the way they lost it. Palmer got into foul trouble in awful fashion. I mean, that was horrible officiating, that he gets four fouls or whatever it was in the first half, you know, two or three fouls early on, and he's no factor. And there's nobody for Nebraska that can come in and give them 15 minutes of solid support. Not that somebody's got to replace Palmer, you know, by scoring 22 points, but 15 minutes and maybe 10 points, you know, 10 and 5 rebounds, or 5 points and 10 rebounds to show some toughness. But that game was the red flag, and I'm not talking scarlet and cream color red. It was the red flag on the season for me, and that's going way, way back. There's no depth, and there's nobody that can come in off the bench and provide minutes and produce. And the other red flag in that game was that showed that this team does not have a physical toughness about them. You know, Texas Tech plays the game the college way, the way Chris Beard coaches. I mean, it still looked like a college basketball team, but it looked like a team that was West Texas ready to rough and tumble. And Nebraska should have that kind of mentality that, okay, you might beat Nebraska, but you're probably going to get beat up by Nebraska. And I think that game exposed that team had no depth, had no production off the bench, and just did not have the will or the toughness to fight and scrap. Because, again, it goes back to the finesse of the NBA game. Mm-hmm. They're playing an NBA game that started to evolve after, you know, in this century, as opposed to the NBA that I grew up watching in the 70s and the 80s, where, you know, the Bad Boys of Detroit, you know, they may have been the extreme, but that's the way the game was played in the NBA. And now you can't have a touch foul. You know, flops aren't even, you know, penalized in the NBA because it's such a touch game anymore. And that's the way, unfortunately, Nebraska's season has evolved. That's the way, you know, it's almost like watching the G League?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like watching the G League and not a college team, unfortunately. Yeah.
About 90 seconds, Bill Dolman with us on Hill Varsity Radio. And, you know, at some point you kind of have to feel for the kids how much, you know, they've just, you know, mentally they're battling as far as Copeland being out, how much they're having to play on the court, not really having that depth like we keep talking about. But when it all comes back to it, it kind of comes back to the head guy, and you wonder how much of this is on Miles and, you know, where does the season go from here if it continues the way it is? Because now they're heading into a much tougher stretch of the season. I just want to get your take. Where does it go from here, and what? How much of this do you put on Miles?
Well, I loved him, and I thought, you know, 7 years ago he was the right guy for the Nebraska job, and I still think that. I think that Tim could be a successful coach at Nebraska, but sometimes, you know, you just got to break up, and I think it was that way with Barry Collier. I think Barry Collier's a great coach. Barry Collier got screwed by the NCAA, as did Jim Woolridge at Kansas State, by an 8-5 rule, you know, that really hampered recruiting for programs like that. Doc Sadler, you know, everybody loves Doc Sadler to this day, but sometimes it just runs its course. And I would love for Tim to be able to continue to work with the players that he's got coming in. Those will be coming back, to find some depth and to get it done, because, you know, you make the move, you're out a lot of money for one. Mm-hmm. And you're out of a couple of years for two. Now, maybe you can strike gold with somebody who can come in and bring in some players, and all of a sudden in 2 seasons things can turn around. But, you know, I don't know what happens the rest of the way this season. I feel badly for Tim. I feel badly for the players, you know, who had such promise at the beginning of the season, at the beginning of the calendar year. Smoking Creighton the way they did was one of the high points of Nebraska basketball. Mm. But after that, you know, you just wear those guys down, and I don't know. I hope Nebraska fans, you know, get behind the team and support them. But I think the writing is on the wall. Hopefully it's only in pencil, mm-hmm. and that some magic strikes in the next, you know, couple of weeks, that all of a sudden they turn it around and they get hot and they sneak in. But at this point, it's pretty tough to believe that that's going to happen, especially when you score 45 points and, you know, you're hanging your hat on defense in a league like the Big Ten with no offensive production to support it.
Pride of Fairbury, NBC Sports, Bill Dolman. Bill, I appreciate your time, and enjoy the biathlon season, and you just have a great day.
Not only will I enjoy the biathlon season, but everybody can enjoy the biathlon season on the networks of NBC, beginning tonight with the relays from Kenmore, Canada.
Thanks, Bill.
Go Big Red.
And we're back.
Fellas, think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. You can dial up 466-377-6800, 825-5865, and find us on Twitter at Hail Varsity, at Schmidt underscore radio, at Searles underscore HSKR71, at Two Birds, One Stone. Colton, you're not wearing a hat today. It's like ice outside, and you're not wearing. You have 48 hats.
Yeah, that actually.
You have more hats.
You
have more hats than Kardashian has shoes.
Well, I'm trying to do the whole shoe thing too, but
why? Okay. I've never understood this. I've never, for the life of me, these sneakerheads and stuff.
Carson's a sneakerhead,
but why? Like I know guys that buy shoes, and they're like, "Oh yeah, never worn them. They just sit in the box because they look cool." Like, what is the point?
Well, Schmidt, you've seen my purple ones. They were the Kobe's purple.
Yeah.
They were like.
Didn't you wait in like line 7 months for that thing?
Well, when they came out, I waited forever to get them because they were expensive. And my fiance ended up getting them from New Jersey because I wear a 14, which apparently is the hardest shoe size to find.
Yeah.
And she paid.
I wear a 14.
I wear a 14 too, so we'll flex on Schmitty a little bit.
Apparently.
In his 9.
She just decided to spend
there,
whatever.
Chimp. That's not a 9.
10?
10?
Easily. Wait, keep going.
9.5?
11.5.
Yeah, there we go.
Keep going.
You 13?
No, not 13.
12.
12.
Anyways.
But not a 14.
Back to your Kobe 11s.
Well, they were the first shoe that came out like after you retired or whatever. So, but it was like a limited color that I think they re-released because they just kept changing it. So, they were a hefty price. And I don't wear them. She would get mad that I didn't wear them as often.
You just rub them with a diaper.
Yeah, wipe them down. I don't know.
Junior's nothing, all about the Adidas Boost.
I can never do.
And then he got these Air, whatever the hell, I don't know. They cost as much as a freaking bat that would help him get hits during baseball.
Dude, it's the swag, man. Look good, feel good, play good. It's a thing.
And guess what? If that's his thing, if he wants to spend money on shoes... And I like shoes growing up too.
And Fortnite skins.
Difference is I never like got them, so we make him chip in. So
that's all
you right. Got your Kobe's. That's cool.
Yeah, I try not to go, and because then I'll get like the pair I have on.
What's your thing,
maybe?
Searles?
UGG slippers, the most comfortable shoe known to man. I've had these for 2 years.
I've had these for 9.
They're incredible.
Never get rid of them.
I wear these in the wintertime, and I wear Adidas team-issued sandals from Nebraska in the summertime.
You're good.
And then I have my cleats, and that's all you need. My wife would hate me for saying that because she buys me shoes that I don't wear, but...
Wear the slippers, man. They're shoes.
They're great. That's my exact point. They're shoes. You don't have to like reach down in the morning and tie them when your back hurts. Like, just slide them on,
You do it.
Ooh, that's why I got these ones now. They're slip-on cloud foam.
Okay,
Adidas.
Those are good.
And they're like my everyday shoe now.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
A day in the life of Colton and his footwear. Nebraska basketball, and Mitch said it right. Nebraska's a bit off the rails. Searles, you've been a part of a lot of teams. You love Nebraska basketball. You watch when you can. And you have confidence issues. You have execution problems. You have just an offense that is just been awful.
Abysmal.
You have the injury to Cope, which is not good. But you just have a team that has they've not gone to that place and responded well with the adversity because of the hype. Things are supposed to be all right. You have the 11-2 start, and guys just aren't playing together, and they're not playing smart basketball. And it's not, it's more of a surprise when they do play smart basketball. They're forcing it because they want to do well. Yeah. So it's not like they're trying to go rogue for the sake of showing off. They're going rogue for the sake of, man, somebody's got to make a play and I want to help my teammates, and it's going from bad to worse.
Right. I mean, you get to this point where you're trying to do something to be the difference, and it's the kiss of death for a lot of teams because all of a sudden you start thinking too much, you start putting too much in instead of just the quote, I mean, the Belichick, do your job.
Just do your job.
Just do your job. And
you hear coaches say it all
the
time.
I've heard coaches say it my entire career, but it's the most truthful statement that, like, it can be for any sport. I don't care what it is. If you get one guy that's like, okay, this is my time to spark our team, and all of a sudden, boom, and like you said, it just snowballs because then everyone's like, I have to do this, I have to do that, we have to do this versus let it come to you. Just stay consistent. I mean, consistency is the what everyone wants, no matter what position, what sport. Be consistently good. Don't make the dumb errors. There's going to be errors. No one's going to be perfect, obviously. But watching Nebraska, it's just like that. Everyone's trying to be the spark instead of just kind of letting it naturally happen. But the problem is you got your guys that should be the spark, guys like Palmer and Copeland, obviously out hurts. But you need those guys to step up in the biggest moments, and that hasn't happened for Nebraska ball. And it's just tough. I mean, who do you look to? I guarantee that locker room's looking around right now of who's gonna be the guy. But the problem is it needs to be the older guys, and they need to tell the younger guys, hey, I got this. But you got to live up to it when you say that.
No, and that's just it. Right now you have the bubble watch that is out for the Big Ten, and ESPN.com has your locks. Absolutely, Purdue, Michigan State, Michigan. And what is very true about the Big Ten is Indiana was just a mess. Nebraska 2 weeks ago drills Indiana. It's the best Nebraska's looked in forever. A little more than 3 weeks ago, excuse me. But point is that's Nebraska. That's the Nebraska team you kind of think of this season, like their high moment. And Indiana's just been a bleep show, right? They were where Nebraska's at. What do they do? Indiana's talented enough to just go win at Sparty. They did so Saturday night. Maybe that's the wake-up call Sparty needed, but anywho.
That was a great game.
That was an awesome game. It was overtime, and Nebraska dominated Indiana, and Nebraska was close enough to win against Michigan State at home. So, you know, Nebraska is not – the gap isn't Grand Canyon size. It's just between these guys' ears, playing smart basketball, taking good shots, and having any offense whatsoever. So you got Sparty and Michigan and Purdue that are in. They're your locks right now. You have Wisconsin and Maryland and Iowa that are probably in. So that's six. Work to do. Indiana's back on that line that you could talk yourself into. Ohio State and Minnesota both are good. Nebraska has gone from a team that's been a 5 seed to a 6 seed to a 10 seed to now on the bubble to last 4 out because of this stretch they're in. And they are too talented and too veteran to be doing this. And
absolutely.
And you had Tim Miles watch going on, and you hate to have that discussion already in February, but man, it's just been abysmal, and they're better than this. He needs to get his guys ready to go.
Yeah, you got to get your guys ready to go, but at the same time, you got to be ready to go. I mean, this is if you're a senior or you're a junior, and this is your last chance, you're as good as what you put out on tape, and you're as good as your last show. A lot of it falls on the players. A lot of guys talk on team and like coaches and stuff, but as a player, I know that when we're struggling, I want to make sure that like I want to put out on tape what I am.
Like, so you're doing your job.
It's a little bit of self-preservation, but guess what? If everyone pulls back into that self-preservation of just play inside yourself, do what you can do, know your strengths, know your weaknesses, that's how great teams are put together.
That's how you respond.
It's how you respond to being called soft.
Yep, the right way.
Right. You got to respond right way.
You got to know and not gamble losing your team if you call them soft and they say, screw you, Crazy Tim, we're done.
Right.
We'll see.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, Chris@HaleVarsity.com.
Just try me.
Back to Hale Varsity Radio.
So time to relax a little bit, and you can go see Deb the Spa Lady and find a way to relax, whether you want a two-seater, a four-seater, or the jumbo. We're talking the Swim Spa, Home Innovation Spas, 20th and Highway 2. Deb, how the heck are you?
I am great, Chris. Thank you. I'm glad we made it on tonight. We've had a little trouble lately. We were actually gone last Thursday. We were in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Now, how lucky was I to get to go to Fort Wayne? That's where the factory for Master Spas is. And the wind chill was minus 41. So we were really thrilled that they brought us there for sales training.
Well, on top, anyway, I mean, on top of Fort Wayne, and then the wind chill, man. I mean,
I know, a double whammy. Uh-huh. But anyway, we did learn a lot. We got to see the new some parts of the new factory, and that's the nice thing about Master Spas. They are made in the USA, so that's a big deal to us. So. We've got the Master Spas. We've got the Cal Spas, which are also made in the USA. We're ready to go, and we are set up really at both the Lincoln Home Show and the Omaha Home Show.
You know what? And the Home and Garden Show is something that's cranked up the 8th through the 10th. I know in Lancaster Event Center is where you're going to be in Lincoln, and then the Omaha Show as well. Deb, give folks a thought here. Deb from Home Innovation Spas, Deb the Spa Lady, 20th and Highway 2 in Lincoln and off Industrial Road in Omaha, spasonline.com. Deb, if folks haven't been out to the Home and Garden Show, man, the setup you're going to have there is pretty incredible, isn't it?
It really is. There is a little of everything. There are some of the small tubs that you can plug into a 110 outlet, fill them up with a garden hose, and you're off and running. Clear up to the swim spa. We'll have a big 15-foot swim spa there, so you can actually see it in person, and you will be amazed at that. And then the six-person, seven-person, all the bells and whistles, and it's something fancy, something simple. We've got it all.
What you have is the key to relaxation, correct?
It really is. Anytime in your own backyard, anytime day or night, you don't have to go at a certain time. You can get up in the middle of the night, maybe your legs are cramping or whatever, and you can go out, hop in your hot tub, and then get back to sleep.
Deb the Spa Lady, Home Innovation Spas, 20th and Highway 2 in Lincoln and off Industrial Road in Omaha, spasonline.com. Deb, give folks some times you'll be out of that Home and Garden Show at the Lancaster Event Center in Lincoln.
Let's see. It starts tomorrow at 1, so it lasts tomorrow, Friday, 1 to 9, I believe. Saturday 10 to 7 and Sunday 10 to 5. And up in Omaha, pretty much the same hour, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Deb, you're awesome. Thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, Chris. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
There she is, Deb the Spa Lady. Going to be at the Lancaster Event Center Home and Garden Show, man. You want to see what that setup can look like? You can go see Deb. Stop in and see her. But you're also welcome to go check it out at the Home and Garden Show.
Thanks for sticking around for the first hour of Hail Varsity, a special best of here for the winter. Coming up in the second hour, we've got Jerry DiNardo, a rewind with Bo Reed, and Michael Franzese. Stick around.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back to it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Great to be with you on a Friday. We say hi to the Big Ten Network's Jerry DiNardo, at Jerry DiNardo on Twitter. Coach, signing day part two got done this week. How you been?
I've been great. I think this has been a huge success, this two signing days. I think the fact that the great majority of the class signed in December, and now everybody else, or all schools that are in a little different situation, had a chance the next month to adjust their class. I think overall it was a big success for the Big Ten.
Big Ten did extremely well, and Coach, I want to focus on Nebraska to start out. And you're a guy who took over three different programs, and you know what it's like to try and sort through old staff, your plans, and oh, by the way, go recruit your future players. What type of impression has Coach Frost made on you? You love recruiting. This is year two of Frost, and they nailed it. I mean, that's the reaction around here locally, that Frost and his staff did a great job. But a guy who's been in it for a long time, what did his 2019 look like to you?
Okay, so I think we start here. They were ranked 19th earlier in the day yesterday. I'm not sure that's where they finished, but going into yesterday, they were going to have the best class that Nebraska's had in 8 years. So that's the numbers. Okay, so the question for me is why. That's the what happened. The why is what I like to deal with. And I think there's a couple of reasons why Scott has gotten off to a great start. Okay, he brings his entire staff with him from UCF. So everyone knows how they recruit, right? I mean, there's a culture to recruiting. When most coaches take over for the first time, if they don't bring the entire staff, someone on that staff has to learn how the head coach wants to recruit. If he only brings half of a staff or he's a new head coach, he's got to teach 10 guys how to recruit. So I think that's number one why Scott has had success so quickly in 2 years. The other thing is you need to know your niche in recruiting. So my niche at Vanderbilt was different than my niche at LSU. Nebraska's niche is what Coach Osborne did, as Scott observed him as a player and later as a coach. It's a national recruiting base. The new rules have helped Nebraska. So the reason they've had success is because he brought a staff and he knew his niche right away. They hit the ground running. Now, I will say this, Chris. I still maintain, I said this on the network yesterday, I still maintain Nebraska should and will be a top 10 recruiting class or top 10 recruiting type of programs as we go forward, not a top 20. They're going to jump up in the top 10 while Scott Frost is coaching at Nebraska.
You know, you look at the history and success of the program, and then you look at Frost and you combine that. Is that why you feel Nebraska will be a perennial top 10 team?
Well, yes, but I do think the rules have changed. I think Scott has a tougher job than Coach Osborne. Coach Osborne was in a league most of his career where it was them and Nebraska and the other six. You know, this is a much more competitive environment for anybody coaching at the elite programs like Nebraska. But the facilities come in, the tradition comes in, the fact that they're in the West Division. I mean, I have to tell you, the stars are aligned for Nebraska to take a major step, in my opinion, in their program. And a lot of it has to do with Scott, but there's also a lot of other things that were out of his control that are positive. A lot of times you take over jobs and the things that are out of your control are negative, which means you can't change them. But when you have the history of the academic support that Nebraska has, the strength training, the nutrition, remember, Nebraska used to be on the cutting edge. Now they're just trying to compete in a more competitive environment.
Jerry DiNardo, Big Ten Network with us, Hail Varsity Radio. We're talking Big Ten recruiting as National Signing Day was on Wednesday, and Coach had his special with the network during that Wednesday, part two of Signing Day, the early session, the late session. And, Coach, how did you divide up your time? We'll get to the rest of the West and Ohio State and Michigan and everybody else in a moment, but how did you prioritize, and when did you know, all right, man, I'm not going to get this kid. It's time to move on to my second choice.
Right. Well, that's very tricky. You hit it right on the head, Chris. It's prioritizing your time so you can go to number two. The problem is when you prioritize your time and you have to drop to three or four, and the cold hard facts, the brutality sometimes of recruiting, the honesty is keeping two alive while you're hoping that one comes. It's no fun to cut number two loose, because the longer you recruit number two, the stronger the relationship, and number two's trying to balance you with somebody else. You want number one. If you get number one, you've got to make that difficult phone call or go see that prospect and say, Chris, we don't have a scholarship for you. or you lose number one, you go to number two, and number two said, you know what, coach, I'm going to the other school because I was their number one. And then you got to leave that building, that home, and go save them and try to convince number three. So it's a little tricky. How you divide your time, you just, I mean, you don't divide your time in recruiting. You don't stop recruiting. I mean, if you're not coaching, if you're not eating, if you're not with your family, you're recruiting. That's the only way to divide your time up. I mean, if you're not doing it, it better be because you're with your family or you're coaching.
Did you love it? I mean, did you love recruiting?
Chris, here's what I love. Yes, I did. The short answer is yes, and I know I'm bad on short answers. But here's what I loved about recruiting. So it has maybe little to do with football. I got to see this country through the view in living rooms and kitchens. I got to see the richest, the poorest, the whitest, the blackest, the most rural, the most urban, from coast to coast. And it has changed my life politically. It has changed my personal life to see this country in all these different homes of the great country that we live in. And I love that part of it. When you walk into that home, you don't know what you're gonna see. You don't know what the questions are gonna be. You don't know what the feel's gonna be. You just know that there's all kinds of people that make up this country, and I'm glad that I got to meet all kinds of people.
That's awesome to hear, Coach. I mean, that's really cool to put into words your experience and the impact on you. Jerry DiNardo, a couple more minutes with us. Hail Varsity Radio at Jerry DiNardo on Twitter. Okay, you have Nebraska finishing where they finished. Purdue, wow, that was big time by Coach Brohm. Touch on big picture Purdue, if you could. And then what's the outlook here in the East? What do you take away from how the East results finished out with signing day?
Okay, Purdue's an extraordinary story. I mean, if there's two stories in recruiting, it's really Nebraska and Purdue. What separates Nebraska and Purdue, you know, Scott took over a program that traditionally has been recruiting in the 20s. That's where they've been ranked for a long, long time, even when they were winning national championships. So Scott has made it tick up a little bit. And as I said, I believe he'll make it tick up more than any of the previous coaches. That aside, Purdue's last 4 years before Jeff Brohm arrived in West Lafayette, their recruiting rankings averaged around 68. Mm. He's in the 20s now. And so the drastic improvement that Purdue has made far exceeds the improvement that Nebraska has made. The difference, and again, I said this on air yesterday, the difference between Purdue and Nebraska is I think Purdue is about where they're going to be. You know, they might kick up a little bit and maybe get to 19 or maybe drop to 27 instead of 23, whereas Nebraska, I think, is in the top 10. But Purdue, you know, if you're in the West, you know, and you're coaching, you know, Nebraska had, you know, I don't know how many years of this East-West thing where nobody could compare to them with resources. Now, the win-loss column didn't reflect that, but now the resources are a little bit closer in the West Division. The history's just not any closer because Nebraska is the program that has the national championships. Quickly in the East, you know, Ohio State, this is the first time in about 8 or 9 years they weren't number one in the conference. Couple reasons. They have a small class, which impacts your ratings. If you watch the tape of their prospects, it still looks like a great class. It's just not higher than Penn State and Michigan because of the smallness of it. And Ryan Day, obviously a new coach, he's got to get his feet on the ground. I said when James Franklin came into the conference, he would challenge Ohio State for the most talented teams in the conference. I maintain that opinion. Michigan is in much trouble as they've had on the field, even though they tied for the East. I think people still look at them underachieving. Their staff room is like musical chairs. I mean, you don't even know who's going to be at the meeting sometimes in the morning. So as unsettling as Michigan has been, I think they deserve a lot of credit for doing a good job in recruiting.
Coach, I want a last thought from you on back East recruiting. And I know you're a guy who grew up in New York City. Nebraska has gotten a talented running back out of New Jersey. Ramir is his first name. And just the state of Jersey, the resource it is, and I know that, that Barry Alvarez has done well in New Jersey. I know Coach Solich in Nebraska did well in New Jersey. And Penn State obviously has done well in New Jersey. And historically speaking, when Rutgers was playing well, you see a bunch of dudes in the NFL from Rutgers that are Jersey natives. I mean, is it, it's not really a secret, but why don't people talk more about the state of New Jersey and their football? I'm glad the Big Ten's in that region because of how good their high school football's been. Is that a region you focused on much at all, either as a coach or now as an analyst?
No, I mean, we did a little bit at Vanderbilt because it was a private school. We didn't do anything from LSU, and we did a little bit in Indiana. But, you know, as it relates to the Big Ten, you know, Joe Paterno always used to say, you know, why do I want to join the Big Ten and give these Midwest schools an entree into my recruiting area? Mm-hmm. So that, you know, and now Joe is taking advantage of Ohio and some of the Midwestern schools as well. It did take advantage of it. So it's worked both ways. I don't know. I you know, to me, Chris, especially talking to you and, you know, your listeners being Nebraska, to me, when I talk about Scott Frost's niche, I go back to Coach Osborne. I mean, when Nebraska signs somebody from New Jersey, somebody from California, someone from New Orleans, and somebody from North Dakota, that's their niche. Mm-hmm. I mean, and historically, and getting all the players in the state of Nebraska, plus the walk-on program, I mean, that was Nebraska's niche. Coast to coast, the Gulf of Mexico to the Canadian border. And now with the new rules, where you could take somebody from New Jersey and you can pay for not only the prospects' transportation, meals, and housing, but the parents and the extended family. Now somebody from New Jersey, Los Angeles, New Orleans comes to campus and the parents see this different place because it is different. They say, wow, my son can come here. It's really cool. Now some will say no. But more are going to say yes now that we can pay for the families to visit. And Sean Eichhoff, I know he didn't leave Nebraska on all that good of terms, but he spearheaded this NCAA legislation change, and he did it for a lot of reasons, but one reason, it was going to help Nebraska as much as it helped anybody else in the country.
Really appreciate that insight. Jerry DiNardo, Big Ten Network, at Jerry DiNardo. Coach, always fun to catch up. Thanks for giving us a few minutes and appreciate what you're doing.
You bet. Thanks, Chris.
A little bit more Big Ten news as we wind through this Friday full of best ofs. Coming up, we're going to have a rewind with our conversation, a shortened version of our conversation with Bo Reed. Coming up next, Michael Franzese from earlier in the fall. We'll talk to him a little bit about sports betting, sports gambling. And obviously, we've talked to Matt Slauson. Big thanks to him. Big thanks to Bill Dolman. And, of course, Searles. We had him on earlier this week. And go out to the Home and Garden Show. Deb Spotlady's out there today, tomorrow, Sunday. Get out there. Relax. Get a hot tub. But before we move on, just to stick with football recruiting, what in Nebraska, they get their grade from ESPN. Every power conference gets a grade. Nebraska finished with a B+. They finished 18th as their composite national rank, sandwiched right between Purdue, who's 25th, and Ohio State. And that's where the big news is. Ohio State, whose quarterback room fleeting. No Tate Martell as he transfers. He's down in Miami. No Dwayne Haskins as he is entering the NFL. Best of luck to him. He is the prototype of an NFL quarterback, so someone will be very lucky to walk away with Dwayne Haskins on draft day. But Justin Fields, the transfer from UGA, Georgia, granted immediate eligibility. His waiver was passed through. He will not have to sit out a year and will be immediately eligible for spring practice. And as long as he stays healthy through spring practice, he will be eligible for the 2019 college football season. So Ohio State may now have the quarterback they're looking for, and we'll see if it's something that Big Ten teams need to be worried about. It's you haven't seen a lot from him, but he's a former five-star. So as recruiting winds down, 2020 will kick in, and we'll see what class of 2019 has to hold for the upcoming season. Bo Reed, next.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back to it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Nebraska basketball, they are reeling. Let's talk about it. Husker Hall of Famer, standout with Nebraska basketball, Bo Reed back with us. Bo, how long ago does that Michigan State talk feel like? You go from that moment, post-Indiana to Michigan State to now. How have you been dealing with this?
Well, you know, my fears going into the Michigan State game and the Big Ten schedule, you know, as a whole, unfortunately, have kind of come to fruition. Our lack of outside shooting has led to people being able to play a certain style of defense against us and grind us into a half court. And we haven't had the ability to force the tempo into an up-tempo game to get easy baskets. And so when you grind us into that half court, we don't have that pure shooter to pull people out of the paint. And we've got guys like Palmer that have to get all the way to the rim to truly be effective. And when he can't, we really struggle to get baskets because the calls that they give him at the rim, they don't give him 10 feet away from the basket. And so it's just been a snowball effect. I mean, go back to that Michigan State game. Copeland alone had 3 3-pointers that rattled around and came out. All three of them looked like they were in. And, I mean, if we hit 3 or 4 threes in that game at timely, you know, moments, that game could have been our game. We played well enough to win that basketball game, and we just didn't shoot the ball well. And now, unfortunately, it's like there's a lid on the basket.
Bo Reed's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Bo, I want to get your thoughts here as a guy that's been in a locker room and been in tough seasons and been in great seasons. The roller coaster, as we call it, that's what this has been, and you're screaming down, right? I mean, that's how this looks right now. From a confidence standpoint, did you ever lose your confidence? And B, what got you out of a funk? Because right now Nebraska's talking out loud about just this confidence, this mental issue, this all these things that are the problem, but no one's stepping up to solve it.
The challenge is when you're winning, nobody questions who's going to take the big shot. Nobody questions someone who comes down without there being any passes to anyone else on offense and kind of breaks someone down one-on-one and goes to the rim. When you're losing, all of a sudden, all of those decisions are under a microscope and people start pointing fingers and saying, well, you know, it's not my fault. And it's a challenge to overcome that because the very people that are your leaders and the ones that are making plays and creating opportunities when things are going well, it just seems like those things, if they don't go well when things are going poorly, people have a 180-degree different perspective on whether or not that player is creating things or playing selfishly. And if the locker room gets negative, then, you know, guys are scared to take shots because they don't want to miss and they don't want people thinking that they're taking bad shots. And it's just, it feeds on itself. Just like, you know, Tim's had a couple of teams where the momentum was positive. Petaway's, you know, I think sophomore year, you know, we had a couple months in the Big Ten that were just unbelievable. And then last year, the same kind of thing. People couldn't deal with us. The problem is the thing that makes us so good and creates that positive momentum is our lack of predictability because we don't run a patterned offense. We don't run a lot of structure. We kind of spread the thing out and let people create and kick. When those 3-point jump shots that are wide open aren't going in, that offense it grinds to a halt. And so the very thing that makes us hard to defend and hard to prepare for becomes very easy to stop. I mean, if you look at Tim's record against Tom Izzo, it's actually pretty darn good. And a lot of that's because Izzo can't really game plan for Coach Miles because Tim has kind of this, you know, unpredictable wide open structure. And, you know, when you don't have a very set play that he can guard a specific way and force the ball to a specific place, it becomes just a basketball game. And then, you know, we were in that game. And we beat them on their home floor a few years ago. We've beaten them in our gym before. And it's just unfortunate that the jump shooting capability of this team has really just, as they've gone into the shooting slump, kids have clearly lost their confidence. They're not shooting the ball to make it anymore. They're shooting it, hoping it goes in. And, you know, I think if you ever talk to someone like an Eric Piatkowski, he never took a shot he didn't think was going in. He wasn't hoping it's going in. He could miss 10 in a row. He thinks his next 10, he's due to make because he's going to shoot 50%. He never loses that faith that he can shoot the ball. And we've got kids that, you know, were shooting the ball pretty darn well early in the season, and then it's just as things have gotten tighter and they've lost a few games, so there's pressure. And, you know, there's always one or two possessions where you think, oh, that's a wide open three, we got to make that, and it doesn't go in, and then it just kind of steamrolls. And so that's the same thing that allowed us to go on these tremendous runs in the Big Ten when no one expected it is the same thing that's hurting this basketball team, is we don't have any structure to fall back on to get us a basket when we give up a 15-0 run to Maryland last night.
Bo Reed's with us, Husker Hall of Famer, Hail Varsity Radio, talking Nebraska basketball. When you look at Nebraska, and there's still plenty of season left, it doesn't feel like as much of an opportunity as more of a death march right now because of how these guys are going. I'm wondering here, when it comes to Coach Miles, and you hear the noise out there about his job security, what's, you know, with Bill Moose, and the players hear that and they're tensing up about it. I mean, what can he be? What can Miles do here to calm his guys? And I also want to ask you about playing for your coach. And Coach Miles got emotional last night at the end of his press conference. He hurts for his kids. I mean, he's sincere about it. Do you remember a moment where Coach Knee got emotional and you guys responded the right way because of it?
I don't know if I remember that. I mean, my junior year was probably as close as, you know, it got when I was injured and Farmer was sitting out and Chubbuck and Piatkowski were redshirting. And there were some whispers that year. And I don't think Coach Knee ever pushed the panic button because he was watching practice and he knew the kind of talent that he had coming in. And so I think that the kids are playing hard for Tim. I do. I don't think anybody's laying it down. But I don't think that it's fair to expect kids to play for their coach. I think the best thing that Coach Miles can do for them is to set them free, to let them know that they have zero to lose at this point, because most people have written them off. And, you know, at this point, they should focus on playing a style of basketball that enables these kids to have fun and play loose and play free, because the pressure and the grind it's not working for this group of kids. Without Copeland to be the guy that hits the big shot to stop the other team's runs, we just don't have that guy on the floor anymore. And we're just going to have to figure out a way to create more possessions and get after people full court and change the dynamics of the game, because any game that's in the 60s, I don't like our chances to win that basketball game. We just don't shoot the ball well enough, and we can't get points in the paint when we need them. So we got to get the game up into the 70s and 80s and take our chances that most teams don't want to play that fast. The challenge with that is we don't have a ton of depth. So right, we're going to have to trust the kids to play some minutes that haven't played very many minutes.
Bo, last thought here, and thanks for your time and insight, man. Always love talking hoops with you. Just the big picture of the Nebraska job, because that is going to be a focus point media-wise of, you know, if there is a move made, and I don't like saying that in February. What's the Nebraska job to you as far as difficulty to attract the right guy?
Well, I think, you know, just the history would suggest that it's not an easy job. Mm-hmm. The facilities would suggest that it's potentially a diamond in the rough job. It's hard to speculate on that, Chris. I feel like we could just as easily be talking about the NCAA tournament this year with a couple of different bounces of the ball. So it's hard to sit and speculate about what the job is and what it means. I think anyone who's been affiliated with the program believes that the Nebraska basketball job is a good job. And the resources and the facilities are there. And, you know, I think it's whatever happens, if the kids rally and Tim continues to be the guy leading the charge, which I hope is what happens, I think it's critical that we create an identity of who we are and what we stand for. And it's similar to, when you look at how our football program gravitated towards like West Coast offense and drop back passing. And, you know, I think you've got to have an identity of who you are, and certain kids identify with that identity and want to play and be part of that. And, you know, I think Wisconsin's done probably the best job of that, both on basketball and football.
Sure.
They said, we're going to play basketball this way. And they recruit to that style of basketball, and they fill their cupboard, and they continue to believe and sustain that. And they've built consistency into the model. I'm not sure Coach Miles had that luxury when he got here. And so he had to kind of, I know Coach Knee used to have a saying, he said, hey, I'm not Father Flanagan. I need parts. You know, I need players. And so he also used to like to say, you know, I'm trying to have a circus and I need animals. And so, you know, it's one of those things where Coach Miles is trying to, you know, adapt to the talent that he has, and he's trying to get the best available players. And people may not want to hear this, but, you know, building a basketball program is not a 3 or a 4 year process. It's probably a 6 year process. And, you know, I think that Nebraska basketball job is a good basketball job. I think Coach Miles would tell you it's a good job. And like I said, we could just as easily be sitting here talking about an impending NCAA tournament berth, and it's not completely dead yet. It's just, it seems unlikely given the way that we're shooting the ball and what's happening. But I feel for those kids. You can tell Coach Miles cares about those kids, and then they're playing hard for him. It's just the Copeland injury hurts more than people know. That kid made a lot of big shots. He was quietly our go-to guy when games got tight and when possessions mattered.
Bo, awesome to catch up, man. We'll do this again. Thanks for a few minutes.
Yeah, appreciate it, Chris. Thanks for having me.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Former Colombo crime boss Michael Franzese joined Hail Varsity this fall to talk about the ESPN 30 for 30 playing for the mob. Michael, wanted to get your thoughts on the documentary, the ESPN 30 for 30, playing for the mob. And many of us have seen Goodfellas, the movie. You do a number of speaking engagements around the country talking about your life in the mafia. Take us through an interaction when it comes to trying to coerce, trying to affect the outcome of a game, and some of the roles you're familiar with.
Well, you know, I didn't see the 30-30, but certainly I'm very familiar with that whole Boston College scandal at the time. I knew Henry Hill very well, and Jimmy Burke was a friend and associate. He was with a different family, but we were fairly close at that time. So I knew what was going on. You know, the case there, it wasn't so much of a case of them coercing the athletes. The athletes were pretty willing to go along with it at the time. I think it started out with Kuhn mm-hmm. back then, and then two or three other teammates were involved in it. You know, I recall, Henry getting involved and just how that whole thing played out. As a matter of fact, he gave me a tip on one or two of the games back then because we were kind of friendly. But, you know, that's one case. I mean, it happens all different ways. You know, quite often we would get an athlete and we would coerce him into, remember, it's all about shaving points. It's not about winning or losing. It's about affecting the spread. And that's the biggest thing you use to get into an athlete's head, because they don't believe that they're blowing the game. They don't believe that they're really hurting the team. You know, it's a gambling issue. It's a chance for them to put some money in their pockets. And, you know, the problem is that once you get them under your control and they make a mistake like that, well, they're marked really forever. Because now you got forever, you hang it over their head, and it becomes a problem. So they have to continue, or, you know, they got a problem for themselves.
Michael Franzese with us, Hail Varsity Radio, as we're talking about point shaving and the mafia and college basketball. Michael, how much is it still possible that it goes on today? How big a player is the mafia in point shaving and in sports gambling right now? I know they're huge in sports gambling, but point shaving in general. Could 1978 happen in 2014?
Well, Chris, let me give you some perspective. You know, since 1996, I've been working with all the leagues. They recruited me out of prison when I was getting ready to come home, and they recruited me for this very purpose, to speak to the athletes about gambling, because they know it's a big problem both on the pro level and the collegiate level. And in 1998, I started working with the NCAA and have spoken at over, you know, 350 Division I and II universities throughout the country, all the big ones. And my feeling today, and from what I've experienced now, it's more prevalent today than it was back in my day, because today they have access to gambling everywhere. And there's a different mindset from a lot of these young people, especially on the college level. I'll give you something that's probably going to shock you a little bit. I've spoken at all these universities, most recently Florida State. They brought me in. I've done Nick Saban's teams a number of times. And I offer the student athletes, I tell them, listen, and this is football, basketball, baseball. I tell them, if you got a gambling problem, if you got an issue, and I says, and if you don't have one, you're going to know somebody that does. One of your teammates got a situation going, guaranteed. I said, because that's what's happening today. I said, if you got a gambling problem, email me. I said, I don't need to know your real name. I don't work for the NCAA. I'm not part of enforcement. I don't need to give you up. I just want to help you out. This has never failed yet, Chris. In over 350 appearances, by the time I get back to my hotel room, I have emails from college kids that are going through a gambling situation, some of them who have admitted to me that they've shaved points, and a lot of other stuff going on. So is it going on today? You bet. No doubt.
What type of influence still exists, in your opinion, in the mafia with this? Is this small-time guys, or is it part of the five families that have their reach into this?
No, it's definitely not small-time. I mean, gambling is major, major business of the mob. You know, since the days of Prohibition, that's been the number one activity, I would say, that guys get into. Because guys on the street, number one, they love to gamble. It's part of who they are. And number two, it's big business. And, you know, you don't have to report it through your taxes. And, you know, guys in the mob, one quality I believe that we had, and it's why the mafia, La Cosa Nostra, was able to infiltrate into every fabric of society in the past 100 years. We're the most dominant organized crime group out there, was because we know how to get around to people. We know how to work them. We know how to schmooze them. We know how to get into their psyche. It's something that guys are really professional at. And when it comes to these athletes, especially the young ones, you know, they're really no match. You know, a lot of times you get many times I was in a club where some of these athletes hung out, especially the college kids. You get around them for 2 or 3 weeks. You get friendly with them. You learn their background a little bit. You find out that they might be struggling financially, so on and so forth. And then you hit them with, hey, here's 10 grand. Put it in your pocket. Tomorrow you're favored to win by 10. Don't win by 10. Win by 6. Win by 7. Here's 10 grand. You do that for me 10 times, you got $100,000. It's very hard for these young people to pass up. You know, and today especially, because they have there's a different dynamic going on in the minds. I don't know if it's because, you know, they get treated so well as student athletes. They really think that they're part of an elite group. You know, if you see how they're treated in college, they're treated like majesty. And maybe they really think that, you know, that they're beyond any kind of reproach with this. But they fought for it.
Michael Franzese with us, former mafia boss, Colombo crime family, MichaelFranzese.com, at Michael Franzese on Twitter. His comments and thoughts on the ESPN 30 for 30, playing for the mob. And if you haven't seen that, check it out. I thought Jimmy Burke went down for the Latanza stuff, and I know the story from Goodfellas on Henry Hill, how he flipped, but it took till last night to put together that it was a Boston College takedown that got Jimmy Burke.
Yeah, I mean, they couldn't, you know, the Lufthansa thing was such a mess, and you know, there was a few years that passed,
mm-hmm.
And it's kind of hard to prove some of the things they were alleging at that point in time. And Ed McDonald, the prosecutor, I knew him well. He was my prosecutor. You know, so he went after the most obvious when Henry started talking, and that was, you know, the Boston College deal. That's why Jimmy went down.
Michael, you've also gone around and tried to talk about your past in the mafia and also the change you've made. How is the outreach going with, because you work with a lot of young people. How is that going around the country?
You know, this is a film that I really want every youngster to see, especially those we consider at risk. You know, that's a very subjective statement. I believe all our young people today are at risk with all the negative influences they have at their fingertips, basically. But it's gone very well. The documentary that you mentioned that won all those awards, it was directed really at risk youth, and we filmed it at a high school. It's amazing, on a high school budget. We entered into these film festivals, and we're winning best documentary up against all these other films because we tell it like it is. We show the kids how they react. We give them a good lesson in there, something really important. And, you know, I speak in universities, churches, you name it. I go into detention centers. I'm with young people all the time. And parents are struggling with their kids these days. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. And they appreciate, you know, anybody that maybe has been there and done that and can lend any experience any good wisdom and advice for our young people, because we really need it. This is a tough world they're growing up in. And I always say, you know what, we created the environment that they're living in today. And I think we owe it to them to try to help them out, because it's sad. A lot of these young kids lose their way. Chris, when I was in prison, so many of them I saw come in with just, you know, hard time, mandatory minimum drug sentences. And if you listen to them, they all had the same stories. You know, they didn't have a father at home. You know, the mom was trying to do her best, and they get hooked up with the local drug dealer or the gangbanger, and then it's downhill from there. So it's a sad situation. I have a heart for these young people, so I do my best.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time on a Friday, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, a winter edition of Best Of. Well, we had some live interviews today as well. Big thanks to Matt Slauson. Big thanks to Bill Dolman. It was fantastic to talk about. I mean, we tried to avoid Nebraska basketball, but fantastic on that. And his coverage at NBC Sports. Big thanks to Jerry DiNardo and his coverage at BTN with recruiting. And, of course, we got to a little bit of a shortened version of Bo Reed and hear a little bit more that rewind with Michael Franzese and sports betting, and something that I think a lot of people would be in favor of after bad beats may even be a little soft for what's been going on recently in college basketball, but what seems to be an epidemic lately have been these random shots being thrown up at the end, just because they're down by 9 or a team's down by 6, and if it goes in, it doesn't really matter. But the NCAA is looking into reviewing all buzzer beaters when it comes to the tournament and it comes to March Madness, as that is one of the most heavily bet on tournaments and sporting events, obviously for basketball, but in the country. And they're looking at whether they need to start reviewing all buzzer beaters, whether the outcome of the game is changed or not. You've seen Iowa State and Oklahoma. A 3 went down, and that changed. It was 2.5, and it goes down to 2. Villanova and Creighton, where clearly the buzzer was off, but they counted the 2 points. So that takes that and flips it to Creighton covering rather than Villanova covering. So an interesting look at how big of an impact in about a year's time that the legalization of sports betting has become, that we've gotten to the point where buzzer beaters that don't change the outcome of the game are changing the outcomes of people's money, and that's basically where that situation's at. also an update as far as the two guys in the NCAA right now that have a chance of hitting 3,000, become the 9th and 10th players to do so. Chris Clemens at Campbell, he's at 2,898 points. Mike Dom's at 2,854 at South Dakota State. Mike Dom averaging 24.9. Chris Clemens averaging 29. Their last games, Chris Clemens had 23 points, Mike Dom 28 points, respectively. And their next games are both on Saturday, as Campbell takes on USC Upstate and South Dakota State travels to North Dakota. So, again, big thanks to everyone we've had on today. Michael Franzese, rewind with him, as well as Matt Slauson on his injury retirement, and Bill Dolman, biathlon basketball, and Jerry Naro on football, and all the Big Ten recruiting. So it'll all be on ESPN Lincoln on the website. We have podcasts uploaded to iTunes, hear it right in the app, and I will upload on the SoundCloud, where I have your 2-minute drill. Thanks for listening. We're back tomorrow, Cranack and I. Thanks.